The following presentation is brought to you by the Pride of ODU, the official NIL collective of Old Dominion Athletics. Be a monarchist. Join the Pride.
Monarch Nation, it's another victory podcast with the monarchist. Old Dominion wins 33-0. Over Troy, but before we talk about it, Aaron, how we feeling?
Feeling awesome, man. I'm glad I hit on my prediction. We still have not lost to a guy named Tucker, although he didn't end up playing all that much anyways. But hey, it's only weird if it doesn't work.
It definitely worked. Old Dominion undefeated at home this season. It's been awesome.
Not even close. Not close games. I mean, 20-something point margins.
And the defense has been fantastic in every home game. And I think it's where the discussion of this game needs to start. Or, I mean, I really should be talking about the Sports Center on campus thing, because that was really cool.
Yeah, that's a good place to start, which I missed, unfortunately. But I heard it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they opened the show with saying that they called Old Dominion fans to come out, and they came out stronger than any other place they've been. That's about as good of a thing as we could have expected. The turnout was awesome. I got to give a lot of credit to the school for how they set up for the camera. They had the band, they had ROTC, they had the cheerleaders, and then they had all the students right behind Matt Berry, and the turnout was awesome. Like, you couldn't even see it really on TV that much because there were so many people watching the show from like the steps of the Web Center. But it was just a special afternoon to be on campus and show get a chance to show the nation what Old Dominion's all about.
Yeah, I'm guessing that was a collaboration between ESPN and folks in the administration of kind of piecemealing that and determining what was going to look best. I'm sure ESPN's got a formula, but I don't know, that collab between ODU and ESPN, they hit it right because it looked awesome on TV. If it was anything like it was in real life, man, I don't know. That showed really well for the university.
Yeah, and hopefully we turn it into some sort of ad for students that are prospective students that are considering applying here, because it's about as good of a look as you're going to have for a student body. Shows how much we care about the athletics here and our school as a whole. That school pride is hard to show off, and that day was a really good opportunity for us to show off that school pride.
Yeah. Another thing that we showed off was awesome Toys for Tots drive. I know we don't have numbers yet. They're tabulating. It takes a little while to come up with these things between the number of toys, the amount of cash that people gave, and the amount of electronic transmissions. It's probably not the right word, but those things are coming on a daily basis. Transactions. There you go. But it was an interesting evolution this year. Harry McBrien, I mean, hats off to Harry every year. But this year, even more so than normal, with the government shut down, he had to have multiple plans, plan A, plan B, and plan C. And once we have all the names and all the particulars, we'll certainly be shouting out everybody there. But hats off to everybody who either donated toys or money, the trucking company, footers, the ROTC cadets or midshipmen, everybody who pitched in, so many fans. It was just a phenomenal show out.
Yeah, I will shout out the moving company, Offload Moving. If you were in the lots, you saw him walking around in this hilarious Uncle Sam outfit, the owner of the company. He's a Army veteran. Great guys. Also need to shout out VFW. I forget the post number. Is it Mike with the local VFW?
With the big-ass check.
Came through in a big way, donating $5,000 to the charity. Thank you to them. Great meeting you guys and being able to hang during the tailgate. But phenomenal effort by Old Dominion fans again by making this a success. Thank you all for your donations. And I can't wait to announce the totals because they're through the roof again.
Then we had a jump team with a dog, with flames coming out of its butt. Yes.
And Pyro. Yeah. The dog did awesome.
He did.
I think my favorite part was.
I'm not sure.
I think my favorite part was when they landed, letting the dog run free for a little bit.
Yes.
Because you could tell the dog wanted a little bit of freedom.
It hadn't been down the road. If PETA wasn't down the road, I think we would have got a cooler show, though.
Perhaps. But let's get to this game. Obviously, the offense had a day, but this game all starts with the defense. We get a shutout. Only the second all-time in Old Dominion history and the first since 2017.
And I know Justice is so happy. He's been clamoring, and he's used that 6-0 Charlotte game so many times in post games this year for the team to be able to lock it down. I know that was a huge accomplishment in LR, and the guys have got to be really, really proud about that.
And I got to say this. So our other shutout is against a bad Charlotte team where we won 6-0. This is a bowl-eligible team fighting for the Sun Belt West Championship. Coming off of a bye. This is a much better shutout win than that one. Like, not even close. We hold them to 138 yards, which is the fewest allowed in program history, even including the games against teams like Shawan and, like...
That's the third time this year that we've set record lows for yardage given, I think.
Yeah. I think it's like...
It's going to be a hard one to beat, though.
Yeah, it is. What was it, 28 yards rushing?
Yeah, something like that.
And then I want to say, all right, so Central, Liberty, Coastal, ULM, and now Georgia Southern, or Troy. We've all held them to 7 points or less this season.
That's impressive. And
on top of that, 9 sacks, program record. Like, what we did on Thursday should not be underappreciated. This defense, all season long, has been performing extremely well at home, but they had the night of their lives and the best defensive performance we've ever seen at Old Dominion.
Yeah. I mean, if I told you at the beginning of the season that arguably your top two linebackers really would not play all season to this point, and then went down what you just said, would you think that was a possibility, or do you think I was crazy out of my mind?
Obviously, no one could have expected this defensive performance this season after we get the Jason news, and then we get Koa out for the year. We were all worried about how this defense would hold up. I mean, obviously, early in the season, we had some moments where we thought it could be a pretty good defense. But as we've gone on in Sun Belt play, it seems to just get better with each week. And a part of that –
And I want to just clear something up, unless I miss some news. We don't know that that's the case, right? We're just – it's at this point where it starts to – maybe not make sense to play. Just two fans thinking out loud.
Say that again? Are you talking about Koa?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it seems like a redshirt year for him.
I mean, that makes all the sense in the world. I just want people asking us if we know something. Clearly, we don't. But look, that makes a ton of sense.
And I'll tell fans this. Like, we have the opportunity to talk to coaches. But when we get those opportunities, we're usually not fishing for information. We're just talking about the games. Like, so we don't ask about injuries because there's also a good likelihood they won't talk about them. So,
plus there's availability report every week. And Ricky came out and said earlier this season, hey, we got to do this now so I don't have to answer questions about injuries, right? And we're like, everybody signed off.
But yeah. Defensive performances we had to talk about individually. First, I think we got to talk about Chris Trinidad. He is a Sun Belt Defensive Player of the Week. He finishes the game with 5 total tackles, 2 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles. That is a
monster game.
For a defensive lineman to have 2 forced fumbles and 2 sacks, like, dude was balling.
A guy that you talked about a lot early this season, a young guy, Jackson Forrest.
Yeah, he had a breakout game this week defensively, led the team in tackles, 3 solo, 7 assists, 10 tackles in total, 1.5 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks. In David's article, it was mentioned he is following the footsteps of some other linebackers that have played under Siler to ball out as true freshmen. Obviously, the legend Jason Henderson, but also Mario Thompson, both balled out as freshmen, and now Jackson has done the same. And it's clear he's getting more comfortable. He's becoming more impactful as the season moves along, and he's got a bright future ahead of him.
Yeah. I mean, you can go all the way down the list of defensive guys, and it's a long list. A lot of guys got opportunities and really showed up. I mean, we were talking about Cola earlier. Like we said earlier this season, Seth, a little more than a year ago, Seth wasn't even thinking about playing football. An opportunity arises, and his impact on this team can't be understated with what's going on with the linebacking core.
Yeah, and he was at the press conference today, and they were talking to him about what's the difference, and he's just so focused on the team. Like, he isn't taking any credit for himself. He's just a true first, like, team first guy. And it seems like that seems to be a common theme that we're seeing with all these guys. They're all talking about doing their 1 of 11th, just do their job, and everything will take care of itself. Go 1-0. Like, they're saying all the cliches. But when you're getting it from everyone that you talk to on the team, that means they bought in.
Yep.
Congratulations to Ricky, Siler, and Decker. The job they've done culture building that last offseason to build this team, they clearly did a good job there. Because, I mean, David Hall from the Virginia Pilot kept talking about, he kept bringing up the Marshall and JMU game and how the team's reacted since. And it's not a bad thing to ask about because they have reacted in an awesome way. And it would have, teams in their past may have packed it in. They maybe said, all right, well, season's lost. We can just be whatever. This team did not do that. And now we're 7-3.
We're right where we thought we'd be.
Yeah, just, maybe. We just took a weird way to get there, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
I also want to shout out Mario Easterly because, again, another guy who has just continued to play well all season long. And this is a guy that earned his opportunity to start here. He waited in the wings. He played as a reserve, then a backup. And now he's kicking ass as a starter. So shout out to Mario. Yeah, I don't know. There's so many guys we could mention.
We'd be here all night.
We would be.
You could talk about Nikendre Tiger coming up with another big play. Impact maker, getting us the ball back. I mean, we could go on for, forever.
Yeah.
You know what? Oh, never mind.
What?
I'm looking at the long list of stuff, and I see that Bull Hargrove had a tackle. I'm guessing it's on special teams. Or did he get it on defense? I don't know. If so, we're talking about everybody is getting in on the action. I don't know.
That had to be special teams because we didn't.
It had to be.
Because one key thing we've talked about all season, turnovers. Did we have any this week, Aaron?
We forced some.
We did.
But we didn't give up any.
And that apparently that's the first thing the quarterbacks reminded Coach Decker of after the game. That we didn't have any turnovers, Coach.
And, Ricky talked about that in his press conference today. Not only did we not have turnovers, but in their review of film, they're evaluating not only for not turning the ball over, but ball security when you don't turn it over. Like, are there plays that are worthy of a turnover? Are you carrying the ball in the proper hand? Are you all the things that they coach? And the staff was really, really happy with regard to their ball security, regardless of whether we turn it over or not.
Yeah, you could add Cole Joseph into that because obviously there's throws in every game that could have been intercepted that didn't go that way. Colton didn't have that type of game this week. He didn't connect on as many passes as he probably would have liked, only going 10 of 20. But those turnover-worthy throws weren't there this week.
Do you know when you have 47 carries for 351 yards, averaging 7.5 yards per carry and 3 touchdowns, you don't have to throw the ball very much.
No. And you get 2 rushes over 60 yards, over 65 yards. It makes things a lot easier. On top of that, I mean, obviously, we talked about the defense already, but the way the defense not giving Troy any opportunity, any momentum, wouldn't have taken much for the offense to win this game. And yet, the offense owned this game.
Yeah.
364 yards on the ground, 351 net. Fantastic game by the offense. Offensive line deserves all the credit. One of the big talking points heading into this game was sacks and this front seven from Troy and how good against the run they are and how much pressure they put on the quarterback. Well, we had 1 sack and they did not stop our run at all.
Yeah, that really didn't present itself. And I feel like all we talked about last week, because I was trying to educate myself, was on that they really wanted to run the ball. They were going to pull a lot. They were going to play multiple tight ends, and they wanted to kind of assert their will against our defense. I was asking, how do we combat that with fast, smaller linebackers? Well, holy crap, 26 yards of rushing. Our guys did exactly what they're coached up to do, and they completely neutralized that running game.
Yeah, and their passing game didn't do anything either.
No.
I mean, we shut them down in every facet of the game. I don't know if we've ever said this before, but the defense won this game despite the score of 33-0. The defense put us in this position. They deserve all the credit in the world for Thursday night. But also, it was great to see Traquan Jones get loose again because it's been a few weeks since we've seen him break one, and he did that. And then Devin, like, did the bell cow thing, 16 carries for 145 yards. Just really happy with how we played last week.
Thursday night, Ricky talked about Devin in the post game, and he made it a point to talk about a couple weeks ago something turning on for Devin. He is more focused, seeing things more clearly, and just they've had some really good conversations and almost like an awakening for the young man. And then when Devin came in post game, he was asked about that. And Devin agreed that things have just started to become more clear for him. So, you know, he had some trying times early this season. He had some injury stuff, but the biggest thing being he lost his mom. And for anyone who has experienced loss like that, understands how that can really rock somebody's world, especially when you are out alone by yourself and someone that means so much to you. And I don't know, it was interesting to see both of them talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I know my mom passed away a few years ago. I was in my 30s when it happened, and it changed. It impacted me in a big way. I can't imagine being a young man like Devin and having that happen. And his will and his determination. Obviously, he's playing for his mother now, but that's the stuff that doesn't matter. The fact that he continues to show up when things are hard, that's what matters. And so shout out to Devin. You're inspiring a lot of people with your play and just being a good, you know, member of the team. Also, I mean, it wouldn't – the way that Marshall game went, if he didn't, like, rebound from that, that would have been, like, the memory of him for the season. And him everything clicking for him and starting to have this success that we all know he's capable of is going to make that kind of the hurdle to get him here instead of being the storyline.
Well, by the way, as you mentioned that and the struggles we had in that game, 49-yard punt return by Devin Thursday night as well.
Yeah. So shout out to Devin. We love it. I think we have a phone call about this game. Is it a good time to listen to
that? I was going to ask you about it. It sounds like a really good time.
Hey, fellas. Amazing game day all around from SportsCenter on Kauffman Mall to the performance by the team for a full 60 minutes of football. Such a well-deserved shutout for this defense after having one escape them a few weeks ago. Great play calls and decisions all around. Only if we could really just play after a bye and on Thursday nights every game. Give me some time here, Aaron. I do want to give my 2 cents on this, and I know a lot of people feel differently, but you all know me, don't really care. Given where college football is today and how impactful these high-profile coaches can be during the recruitment cycle, having James Franklin not only at the game but on the sideline just didn't sit well with me. I know he was there to support both head coaches, and he's the godfather of one of Ricky's sons, but just watch the game from Ricky's house on the couch or something. I don't know. Again, I know it's not necessarily the biggest deal in the world, but after the news broke yesterday about him being in the early stages for the tech job, I was just even more annoyed by it. I just don't like it any way you can spin it. But anyway, on a positive note, shout out to our veterans. Shout out to you all for the toy drive. And shout out to this team for a belt to ass performance for 60 minutes and send us in front of some high profile JUCO recruits. But here we go. A few more games left. Rain on.
Wind you up, Mike.
I'm a little conflicted. He says a couple things in there that I'm not sure we can convince him otherwise. So do I bother to share my opinion on the matter, or do I say it anyways?
Oh, you certainly should. Be more fun that way anyways.
All right. So, I mean, Garrett hit it. Gerard Parker, coach for Troy, was an assistant for James Franklin. Ricky was an assistant for James Franklin for a lot of his career at Vanderbilt and at Penn State. This is his mentor, but also one of his best friends. It's understandable for him to want to support one of his friends and have him support Ricky and Gerard at the game. It all just makes sense. As for the Virginia Tech stuff, look, Virginia Tech is an P4 program. We are a G6 program. If they want an assistant coach or if they want one of our players, it would be a promotion for that coach, right? You're coaching at a higher level, even though we've shown on the field, it's not that much different. If the player has an opportunity to make more money and secure their futures, him being there has zero impact on any of that. Ricky and James are professional enough to know that they are not going to allow them to talk to players like that during a game. I mean, I think it's a lot to do about nothing, really, to be honest.
And in all fairness, Garrick's not the only one. We've seen other fans on social media put the same thing out, but I agree with you 100%. If a coach were going to do something like that, the resources are out there to do it. That would not be the difference maker in a current player or a recruit. And based upon our relationship we've known Ricky for these handful of years and how finally he talks about his friend James Franklin, it seems like the mutual respect is there that those sorts of things wouldn't happen. Not on Thursday, not the way that is. And if someone ends up at Virginia Tech, it ain't because of Thursday night. It's because of Virginia Tech feeling desperate and pouring a ridiculous amount of resources into their next year's team to try to reclaim its fan base. And it would happen either way, whether it's James Franklin going to Virginia Tech or Joe Blow the Ragman.
Also, I mean, you got to think about this for the player's perspective. You're not just going to go there because you saw him on the sidelines at a game. You're going to go there for the opportunity to play at the ACC level, which is a more direct path to the college football playoff. You're on major network television more often. You get to challenge yourself against other ACC opponents each week. If you're trying to improve your draft stock, it's understandable if you wanted to go to that level. And it probably comes with more money from revenue sharing and NIL on top of it. Yeah, it has nothing to do with him being at a G5 game on a Thursday night between two coaches that have coached for the same head coach. Yeah. Now, I want to say, I want to add one more thing to this, because we had a special opportunity to enjoy ODU soccer's last home game, which was talking to Ricky. And during that talk,
the entire second half.
The entire second half. And it was just the three of us talking the entire time. I don't know why no one interrupted. We just got lucky, I guess. But we did ask him. I go, so what's James going to do? Because those Virginia Tech rumors were already out there weeks ago.
That was classic.
Do you remember what he said?
I remember exactly what he said. He goes, you know what? James and I talk. I don't remember if he said almost every day, but we talk a lot. And he goes, and I purposely have not asked him this question. So when the two of you ask me, I can legitimately say, I don't know. If that's not the quote, it's pretty close.
That's how I remembered it. But it wasn't just us. It was the media in
general. Yeah. It just happened to be the two of us asking the question at the time.
Right, and he was honest. So that tells me he probably hadn't even talked to him about it on that Thursday night.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. Ricky is a friend. He's a good friend that understands the business, but he is not going to jeopardize his team or his players. That stuff is just silly, I think. But you're welcome to your own opinion.
And he's not the only one that has that opinion.
Yeah. All right. This game was a blowout. Obviously, hats off to the defense. Hats off to the O-line. Hats off to the running backs. Hats off to everybody that had a hand in this. Complete domination in all three phases. Nathaniel Eichner had a good game.
He did. And since you talked about the kicking game, I'm going to ask you a question in the spirit of me always trying to learn something. I was lazy and didn't actually look this up afterwards. Hope I'm not putting you on the spot. If not, then we'll find out later. Relatively early in the game, we kick the ball off. And when we kick the ball off, the ball is – so we're in the beer garden. If you're looking at the north end zone, we are all the way to the right corner. And the ball is coming dangerously close to the sideline. And I'm thinking, oh, God, are we really going to kick the ball out of bounds again? Is this – well, the player receiving the kickoff – why? I don't know, but decided he was going to field that ball that close and had 1 foot inbound, 1 foot out of bounds, and catches the ball. The official immediately marks the ball there. Troy's coach goes completely apeshit, very animated, showing him feet, you know, and everything. The play goes to review. It gets overturned. I guess the rule must be that you doesn't matter if you have a foot in and a foot out, that it must be touchback. I don't know. Can you explain that better to me, Mike? Because it doesn't make sense to me.
He had to have called a fair catch. So if he fair catches it, doesn't really.
Regardless of whether you're straddling the line.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. Yeah. Now, if he had dropped it, it would have been a live ball. The way that they're treating that rule, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
But so here's the thing. If you wave like this and let the ball bounce and it bounces into the end zone, it's a touchback, right? Kind of the same rule because the ball's now out of bounds. But that's how I'm thinking of it. I would need to look at the rule book because this is something that I don't know enough about. So I'm just kind of rambling for no reason now.
Good enough, because I was rambling with a weird question anyways that no one else seemed to care about. And apparently it is a touchback. So, because it was reviewed and Troy was happy and we didn't argue. So,
right. So I'm guessing
I'm going to go with that. Cool.
All right. This week, I believe the game starts at 1 o'clock on ESPN+. Old Dominion faces off against Georgia Southern in Statesboro. We're looking at the 5-5 Georgia Southern Eagles. They're hosting us. Here is the matchup from PFF's point of view. You will note that our defense is much better than theirs. And our offense is better than their offense. This is why we are favored by 10.5 points last I checked.
Again, that's roughly what we were favored last time, except this being on the road.
Correct. Georgia Southern at times has looked pretty good. Their offense can be explosive and score a lot of points, as they did last weekend against Coastal Carolina. I believe that game ended 42-40, I believe.
45-40, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
45-40. A lot to not quite as a lot, but they scored
a high-scoring affair. Some important things on their offense. Overall, yards per game, they're ranked 57th in the country. Passing, they're 47th in the country. Not quite as good rushing the ball. They're 72nd in the country. And then they're averaging 30 points per game, which is good for 55th. All pretty solid numbers. Our numbers are better in almost every category, except for passing. Overall, we're 20th.
And that's only because we run the ball so well.
Yeah, we're the 14th best rushing team in the country right now. 14th. We're 58th in passing, 20th overall for yards per game, with 457 yards per game, which is a good 54 yards more than they have. And our scoring is 41st. We're scoring 2 more points per game than they are.
I'm looking at their PFF ratings for run defense and pass rush. And our running backs and Colton have got to be salivating at that.
Yeah, and that was pointed out today in the press conference. They have the 135th best rush defense in the country. They're allowing 221 yards per game. They are definitely licking their chops. When you're already the 14th best rushing team in the country and you're averaging 217 yards per game, going against a team that allows 221 per game, seems pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the story here. The only way that gets balanced out is if we don't protect the ball.
Which we've been doing a much better job of lately.
And I'll say this. Our defense, pretty good against the pass. We're 25th in the country for passing yards per game. We're allowing 155 yards per game in passing. So all the numbers just seem to be pointing in our direction.
They do. I mean, Ricky was very careful in the press conference to talk about some things that people might not realize. Just looking at the numbers, J.C. French, he's got 103 carries for 232 yards, a little less than 2.5 yards per carry. But Ricky said he could be a sneaky good runner at times. They'll do some design runs, and he's able to do some things there. They also, like to throw some gadget plays in there from time to time. This last week against Coastal, they had multiple ones, and they executed on all of them. At least one of them was to the running back, O.J. Arnold, who did a really good job of playing that play like he was going to run the ball almost till he got to the line of scrimmage. Further up the field than you see most of the time. A lot of time those guys will get really excited, like, oh, I'm going to throw the ball, and they'll kind of rush it. He was very, very patient in doing it. It wasn't a very pretty pass, but it didn't have to be because he did such a good job. So, I mean, our defense is going to have to be sound and to not take chances and just do what they're supposed to do, not overplay things, and let the talent, let the scheme, let how everything is coming together just kind of do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, to give you a little bit more insight on how good their offense is, PFF has us as the 35th best offense in the country. And we've seen that every game. We're really balanced. We can run on pretty much everybody. We can throw on pretty much everybody. We're a very balanced, talented offense. They're 42nd. So PFF offensively overall, the gap isn't that much different. So there is potential for a shootout here if we don't really play the way we have been on defense.
Yeah, if you stack up the season leaders against each other, you'll see that Colton and JC are very close in passing yards. From a touchdown to interception ratio, they're relatively close as well. Overall team rushing, I don't know the exact number. We clearly have to have the edge just because of Colton with the numbers he has along with our others. But OJ Arnold is a very capable running back. I mean he was an award winner this week for the Sun Belt. I can't remember which one it was. I don't know if it was Offensive Player of the Week or what it was, but you know, he's got some accolades there. And from a receiving perspective, they've got some guys that can certainly light it up. Camden Brown has got, what, 51 receptions? And I guess I'm reading this right, 12 touchdowns? Watch out for that, dude.
They have three pretty good receivers. Camden Brown, obviously, is their number one target. But Marcus Sanders Jr. and Dalen Cobb have been really good as the two and three receiver. Dalen Cobb usually playing out of the slot. Well, since we're talking about this, we can look at how their offense matches up with our defense. OJ Arnold, as you said, is a very good running back. And this passing attack has been able to get it done this year. We will need to be a very disciplined defense this weekend. We will need to keep JC off center and make sure he doesn't know where the attack's coming from, much like we did against Troy. One thing that Ricky talked about, I asked him about pressure, how we've been able to generate pressure this season, because it's something that we have struggled with in years past. And last Thursday, we had the second highest pressure rate without blitzing in the country, leading to those 9 sacks. He said it was all about these guys, when they have one-on-one opportunities, they have to win them. That is something that's going to have to continue this weekend for us to slow down this offense and avoid a shootout. Because they'll be playing at home. They'll be comfortable. And one place we've struggled this year, defensively and offensively, is on the road. Apart from Virginia Tech, we haven't really been our best on the road. And I guess you could throw Monroe in there, but that's Monroe.
But it's a tough place to play.
Yeah.
It's hard to get to. I was going to say the amenities aren't great, but I wouldn't call any of them amenities. The facilities aren't great. But that's more recent. That's more recent than the second half at JMU and then what we had in Huntington. So I think the guys are probably excited for the opportunity to go on the road and to take what they're doing out in the field, grab that victory, because this is an important game for Georgia Southern. I mean, obviously it's an important game for both teams, but at Georgia Southern sitting here at 5-5, they're fighting for their bowl eligible lives. They have 2 games left. I can't remember who they play after us, but let's see. They're on the road at Marshall. So they're probably throwing a lot of their eggs in this basket to get their 6th win.
And Marshall's kind of in the same situation right now. They're 5-5, too. So if Georgia Southern doesn't win this weekend and Marshall doesn't win this weekend, you could be looking at a win or go home scenario. And
yeah.
Marshall has to go on the road at App State, who is going to be trying to recover from their beatdown from JMU this weekend. But yeah. Georgia Southern is not – they're a different team at home. I was looking at it since they've hired Helton. They're much better at home than they are on the road. Their record at home, I think they're like 21-6 in the 4 years he's been there.
That just so this year at home they beat Jacksonville State and they beat Maine. Okay, they should beat those teams. They lost to Southern Miss. They beat Georgia State. They just beat Coastal.
Right, they're a good home team.
Yeah. They have a really good fan base.
Yeah, and they just recently brought back the live eagle. So they a few years ago their eagle mascot had, I guess, passed away or had to be retired. I'm not sure. It went away for a while.
Hey, when you're in Statesboro, you can do that. When you're just a couple of miles down the road from PETA, you can't get away with that shit. Can you imagine if we rolled a lion out from the Norfolk Zoo?
That it's also a little bit different having an eagle from a lion.
I mean, would be pretty cool.
It would be. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough environment to play in. They're really good at home. They obviously have a talented offense that we will need to be disciplined. But while I'm looking at this matchup, all this green in our secondary is a nice sight to see.
It really is.
I mean, all these guys are balling. Frank, Steiger, Jerome Carter, Brandon Crutchfield, and then obviously the Bandit, Jeremy Mack. Like, they're all balling.
Yep.
It's nice to see all this green. All right. Opportunities. We got to get to French. We got to create pressure.
Ooh.
It looks like this every week, though. I mean, it really
I know.
Does.
Well, we've seen like yellow and orange a lot, but when you start getting red, like my birthmark,
yeah,
that's when you know stuff's getting real.
Yeah, we're going to have to create pressure with blitzes and without. And if we do that, we can create opportunities for this defense to create turnover-worthy passes or just incompletions. You see, when he's under pressure, he's completing just 35% of his throws.
You're going to win a lot of games if you can create that sort of situation as a defense.
Yeah, and considering he's thrown 306 passes, or he's thrown 306 passes and only 54 of them have been under pressure, that means their O-line's doing actually a pretty good job of blocking. And he's been blitzed 116 throws and only seen pressure on 54 throws, which means blitzing doesn't guarantee pressure at all.
Well, and the numbers on the slide that you showed right before proves that out. I mean, their offensive line grades out really well. I mean, the lowest rated guys are Wimbley and Strong there at the left guard and the center position. And they're in the 60s. You know, so it's not like some of the ones we've seen earlier this season.
Yeah, we have to create pressure somehow, or this guy is going to have a day because he does have weapons. Yep. They can run the ball. We're just going to have to create opportunities in this game and play very disciplined football for our defense to continue doing what it has been doing in recent weeks. All right. Now, the fun part, where the matchups are all going Old Dominion's way. The offense versus their defense. Now, we talked about all that green in our secondary. Mm-hmm. Take a look at their secondary, because it's...
Heck yeah, man. I mean, it looks like Colton's got the opportunity to go just about wherever he wants to go. But where I'm really salivating is running the ball and running the ball specifically to the right side.
Yeah, this should be a very good game for Colton running the ball, but also for our backs who have played very well this season. Could be a fun game. Because what's one good way to keep a quarterback off center? Keep him off the field.
Yeah.
Play some ball control offense where we're running the ball down their throat, but we're taking our time, eating up the clock. We've seen it with our own offense in prior years where our defense is on the field the whole game, and when they get on the field, you might rush a throw or two because you're just not into that. You're not into the zone, and it creates a bunch of three and outs. If we can control the clock this week and run the ball down their throats, I think that's the way to victory here.
Not going to disagree with you there, man. Especially, I mean, we just ran the ball for 351 yards.
Yeah, we did.
And there's nothing that tells me that we shouldn't. I'm not going to expect us to do that. That would just be stupid. But there's nothing that tells me that we shouldn't be able to run the ball very, very effectively, control this game. And when you can just, when you're that effective running the ball, I mean, it's going to make it easier to throw. It's Holton having the ability to run the ball just makes things really difficult on defenses. You can't. I really like the quote. Ricky was talking and he said that you can't get too cute with defenses. He said you can't play defenses. You have to play defense when you're lining up against an athlete like Holton. You got to do all the things right. You've got to be sound. And you can't just willy-nilly go for stuff.
Yeah, it forces them to be more disciplined than usual. Because, like, you can't leave. If you're bringing extra pressure, someone's going to have a better opportunity to get a one-on-one opportunity. And we know what happens when Trey Brown, Ja'Cory Thomas, or Naeem get one-on-ones, it's bad news for the defense. Yeah.
Bad news.
Got to protect the ball, though. Because, I mean, we know this. The games where we've either had close games or we lost that turnover battle.
Yep. It's a great equalizer.
Yeah, it also puts the defense – it can put the defense in very tough positions. Obviously, last Thursday, we did not do that. And the defense passed the game with flying colors. If you give them the ball in the red zone multiple times, the dam's going to break, right? And we saw that against Marshall.
Yep.
Give the defense an opportunity here because they are facing a very good offense. And don't turn the ball over, and we win this game.
I agree.
Pretty simple one here for me. We will be at Afterglow on Saturday for our final scheduled watch party. I say that because we don't know what's going to happen with the bowl, where the bowl will be played, what we'll do. We also have talked about doing basketball watch parties. That doesn't matter right now. This is the last scheduled ODU football watch party at Afterglow for the season. I hope a lot of you can make it out there. We have some amazing prizes. I need to shout out our friend Jerry Canada. He won an ODU Heinicke jersey at the ODU baseball golf tournament. He says he doesn't have a use for it. So I made a trade with him, and now it's in our possession, and we're going to give it to one of the lucky fans in attendance this weekend. As well as we have signed footballs from Keon White, Zach Pascal, Taylor Heinicke. We got great beer. We got the El Monarch on tap. We got the Kolsch Ricky on tap. Like,
that's come out,
drink some good beer, root on the Monarchs. I should be there around 12:30 or so, I think. Game kicks off at 1. It'll be on the big projector. You're not going to find a better place to watch the game in Norfolk with a bunch of other ODU fans than Afterglow.
No, and an establishment that is so amenable and so supportive of not only what we're trying to do, but just Old Dominion athletics in general, not just football and basketball, but all the Olympic sports. Afterglow is a great place to patronize, and they really open up the inside of the place for us. And as things start to get chillier, and have invested in putting up a big screen and got a speaker dedicated to. It's just a great environment. It really is.
And you talk about their support for the Olympics. I went in the other day just to grab a 4-pack, just a quick stop by. Andrew Griffiths is in there enjoying a beer with his wife and his son. Like, I live in Norfolk, so there's chances of me running into ODU people everywhere. I run into more ODU people there than anywhere else other than ODU athletic events.
That's true. And that's not abnormal to run into those folks, whether it's Andrew or Tennant and his guys, or, you know, Don Manila, or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a great place. It's close to campus. It's very inviting. It's even cool if you got kids, man, out back.
Yeah. So, yeah, come join us. It's going to be a beautiful day to be rooting on the Monarchs as they attempt to go 8-3 for the first time since 2016.
2016. What a quarterback we had back then.
Funny that you mentioned that, Aaron. We have a special episode with David Washington that we're going to put out. When?
I don't know. We haven't decided quite yet, but it should be very soon.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for that episode with David Washington. He was a pleasure to talk with. We had been hoping to try to get that for a while. We finally got the right contact person, and we made it happen. He was awesome, maybe one of my favorite people we've ever gotten to talk with. And it's nice to relive those days and kind of get a different perspective on those days from David himself.
Absolutely.
All right. You got anything else for us?
No. We're not even going to do predictions, are we? Not even needed.
Before we do that, I think we should do them just because we've done them all year, even if not officially. I want to talk quickly about the collective.
All right.
It's no longer a collective per se, but we would love for you to join the Pride of ODU. If you do so, you are supporting Old Dominion Athletics. It still exists. It's just under a different format now. More information will be coming out in future weeks about this. But we're at a very crucial time for Old Dominion football. The portal opens in early January. We have our best team in a decade. They need our support to try to keep as many of these guys here as possible and to go out and get better players. And to do that, you need support from the fans.
And the easiest way. Sorry. Not only. No, I'm sorry. Not only to get better players, but to retain those players that we have, those student athletes that we have right now that are such good fits for the program, for the university, for the community. Like it or not, those types of guys are going to get offers to go places. So us having a strong program, you know, and being able to put up a reasonable and a fair kind of situation for those folks to choose from, that's what we got to do, you know?
Yeah, and obviously one person joining for $10 a month might not make the difference in keeping a talented player here. But a lot of people joining puts a big dent in that. But it also does this. The more people we have join, the better the advertisers will be. Because the more people that are, we can go to advertisers, ODU and our fundraisers can go to advertisers and say, hey, we only had this many last year. We're up to this number now. Isn't that a lot more, like if you double the number, it's a lot more enticing to an advertiser who has a lot more money to spend on this sort of thing. Just a thought. But the more we can get in this involved, the more we can get done. So consider it. Other than that, we got to do some predictions and close this out.
Yeah.
I'm not doing.
Ain't playing a guy named Tucker this week.
No, but we are playing a guy that's French, JC French. And the French have never done that well against people from Virginia.
Nope.
Give me the Monarchs. That's all that matters. Monarchs win. We go to 8-3, have a chance to close out one of the best seasons ever at home against Georgia State. in the Oyster Bowl and go 9-3.
I'm right with you, man. This defense is firing on all cylinders. They're going to set the tone early. I really believe that to be the case. And then if I'm Ricky and Decker, I'm just going to try to establish that run all day long. I think we go down to Statesboro. We bring back a dub. And just like you said, 8-3, looking for 9-3. And hopefully our first 10-win season since 2016. Won't be in the Bahamas, though.
Just protect the ball and good things will happen.
Sure.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. Come see us at Afterglow. Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs. I'm